Gonna start the recording.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the Global Black Caucus Power to the People podcast. I'm Angela Fobbs, the Global Black Caucus Chair, and I'm here today with Adrian George from Sweden.
Hey, Sean.
And also, we have a guest today, Christine Job. She's from Spain. Good morning, Christine.
Good morning.
So great to see you both. You know, it's 12 days until the election. That's amazing.
T minus 12.
Yeah, I am ready for this to be over. Last night in the United States, I think it was like at 9 o'clock, there was a debate between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. I have not watched it yet. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Of course, I don't know what time I got up, but it was really early. But I just didn't want to start my day with that debate because honestly, there's nothing that Joe Biden could say at this point, I don't think, that would make me not support him. Donald Trump is a terrible person who does terrible things, and he has a terrible family, and all his friends are criminals. So he's got to go.
I think a lot of people probably watched the debate because it was... the first one was like entertainment, and it was baffling to a lot of people. It was like nothing they've ever seen. And so, you know, they were watching this one to see how the mute button thing was going to work. But the headlines from the posts, no surprises, Trump, Biden share sharply different visions for the nation in a final and less rancorous debate. So at least it was more civil. You know, they clashed over the handling of the pandemic and trade accusations of corruption. So... you mentioned something, Angela. What was this corruption going for? We're going to be like the October surprise. I thought getting COVID was an October surprise, but.
Well, I think the October surprise is this man is still president and he's got to go. Like, surprise, nothing has worked to get rid of him. Nothing changes his base. He can do everything that he wants. He can say whatever he wants and it doesn't matter. And it's up to us as decent human beings to vote this man out. Christine, did you?
Well, you know, there are tons of fact checker sources that people can look at. The Washington Post has fact checkers. I know even the Canadian newspaper has been listing all of his lies since he's come in. And Trump had according to the Washington Post fact checker, Trump had the lion's share of dubious claims at the debate. So people can check in the facts themselves.
Yes, that's true. Christine, did you see the debate or read anything about it yet?
No. I decided to protect my peace a long time ago pertaining to American politics. Although I vote and I try to stay up to date because I think it's important to actually understand what's going on, just like I try and make sure that I'm up to date here in Spain about the politics. But I decided a long time ago that, you know, a lot of this is just sensationalism. A lot of this is just to scare people. A lot of it is just to keep us kind of on the back foot. And I'm just not with it. I knew that I was voting against Donald Trump since 2016. So that wasn't, I mean, I told people even coming into the primaries this year, they could have sent me my ballot in January. I was ticking B. That was just what it was going to be. I obviously had my favorites, and Joe Biden was not one of my favorites. But quite frankly, it didn't, at this point, I think, at least how I am, I think of the greater good. I think of the collective. And once Joe Biden is in office, then I think there'll be some hard questioning and some, you know, seeing what he's really about. But I think, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Donald Trump is, I don't know if there's a word stronger than incompetent. Like, it doesn't make any sense. I think anyone with sense, and I think anyone with heart, regardless of their political persuasion, knows that. And so
yeah.
I decided not to go the hate route or anything like that.
You know, I think you said two important things that you keep up with what's going on, but you decide not to digest it or ingest it daily. for your own well-being, personal well-being. And we do know that this, especially 2020, has been a hard year for people for lots of reasons, you know, primarily the COVID, the deaths, the sicknesses, the Black Lives Matter movement, you know, the deaths that we see police induced, you know, the fires in the West. And mental health is fragile. Michelle Obama said that she's depressed. So I think that's probably serving you well not to be on top of it daily, but at the same time, not being out of it because you know that you need to know what's going on. Where did you vote?
I saw residency in Georgia, so I voted in Georgia.
Okay, great. Great. Wonderful. That there's two Senate seats in Georgia that are up, and it'd be great to get Democrats in those. We have the race with John Ossoff, and then we have the race with the like 20 candidates in it, which I have been saying is a way to suppress voter, to suppress Democrats and make sure Kelly Loeffler retains her seat. I don't even understand how they're running an election like that, really.
Well, I think Georgia, is one of the textbook examples of voter suppression, period. I think that the history of voting in Georgia is long and muddied, especially for Black people and other ethnic minorities. Everyone knows what happened in the gubernatorial election 2 years ago. I was abroad then as well. My vote was
she got robbed.
I sent it in plenty of time and was not counted. And it's just blatant. I think that, you know, the Republicans really play to win and they will do anything to win. And I think that Democrats are at a disservice trying to play as if that politics is like a gentlemanly sport, because it's not. Mm. And I think that Democrats will definitely have to roll up their sleeves and get a little dirty, or at least create space for third and fourth parties that are willing to, because I also have to say that I am very I'm disappointed in the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party does not necessarily represent all that I am, but I understand that we do have a two-party system. I'm not one of those people who are like, well, I'm just gonna keep on voting third party. Like, I get it. I understand the mathematics, but it still doesn't make it less disappointing when Democrats play this kind of moral support, like superiority thing, and refuse to get dirty when the Republicans have literally no line that they won't cross. And so, which I think has been the outcome for these voter suppression. And I think that there is no line to cross if we are really defending people's rights to vote. And it's disappointing to me.
Yeah, I can understand that. I don't know. I'm not so sure I would use the word disappointing for myself. I would approach things much differently, because I always have this feeling that I get from a lot of Democrats, not all of them, but that the truth is ugly, and somehow if you say the ugly truth, you know, then it's rude. But I'm sorry, if you steal people's children, it's called kidnapping, you know, and there's still at least 1,000 children that will never see their parents again, unless there's some kind of miracle, something, you know, they accidentally run into each other somewhere in the future or something like that. It's disgusting. And I just think that we need to use stronger language when we discuss these things, to like the truthful language. We don't have to, the thing is, a lot of people consider it dirty. We don't have to make anything up. It's all happened. Like, you know, I mean, the fact that, who's that woman, Jean Carroll, the one that said that Trump raped her in a dressing room in a department store in Manhattan. The children are missing. How many things have he supported white supremacy? he has done any number of, he has a secret Chinese bank account. All these things, it's like, it's not mean to say the truth. Like, if your truth is negative, then you just have to, we have to learn to use this stuff better, I think. I don't know, I would say I'm more left to the left than most, the average Democrat, for sure. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
You know, I was on a DNC call.
Okay, well, go ahead, Adrian, and then we'll go back to, go ahead. You have a perspective.
No. I'm having bad connection.
Really?
No, I'm going to say, because I'm on a DNC call. Everything that you say is exactly the messaging that the DNC sends out every week, almost every day, to members like me that I share to leadership, on our leadership listserv that in turn they're supposed to send down to their members to turn to get out. So, and it's the same thing that Tom Perez, the chair of the DNC, has been saying since he's come in. You know, it's not like we're pulling any punches. I don't know. We've been winning races since 2017. You know, the blue wave, you know, special elections, the midterms, you know. So I'm not sure. It's a perception that the Democrats aren't doing it, but I know the party is doing it, and the party spokespeople are doing it, and the DNC members are doing it. And I'm not sure where it gets watered down or, but the, you know, for all of these things that you say, his base knows this, and people like us, we know this as well. As far as what kind of person, if we're talking about character or we're talking about policies, you know, dismantling this, pulling out of that, you know, that it's, that's the stuff that's happening in broad daylight. And it's okay, secret bank accounts, that's something coming new to light. But all these other transgressions, we knew that he was a rapist and a, well, I don't know if we knew he was a rapist, but we knew that he was accused of rape and not respecting women before the election, and still all these women voted for him.
Yes.
So I don't know what other truths can be told other, and there's some people that don't care. And that's, and this, the other thing I think we have to understand is that that's America. He appeals to America, and that this is who we are. And, you know, we're the other part of America that has always pushed back, has always fought for what's right and our rights, our civil rights. Nothing was ever given to us. So I don't think that, and, you know, we've seen in candidate Biden called him a clown during the first debate. And we've seen Michelle Obama and Barack Obama during the convention say he's unfit. So, you know, the truth is out there. The what's going to bring it home is people going to the polls and then us being vigilant about our votes, because we do know voter suppression is real. And Christine, I know Angela was going to ask you about your podcast, but also tell us, how do you know your vote wasn't counted for Stacey Abrams?
Oh, because I was in contact with the electoral office, and I was tracking it because I had actually requested my ballot at the beginning of the year. I actually tend to request, I register, I say I'm out of the country, this is my address, I do that. And then when it was getting closer and closer to the election, I think I first got the primary ballot, that was no problem. And then we were getting closer to the gubernatorial election, I hadn't received my ballot. I followed up. And when I finally did receive it, it was like mid-October. And I sent it right back. And I followed up to see if it was been counted, if they received it. And it wasn't. It wasn't at all. So it was shocking.
So what did you do different this year?
This year, I did kind of the same thing. I requested the ballot early. I was on top of it. I think what's different is that Georgia now has this tracking app or something that they didn't have last time. At least I didn't know they had last time. And so it made it seem like they knew everyone was watching them. And so it then seemed like they were a little bit more mindful. And I got the notification, my ballot was received, it was counted, everything like that. And again, I mean, who knows if it really was. I think I'm a little bit of a skeptic now. That's what it says. I have the proof, but we can only time will tell.
Yeah.
Now you said it was shocking when you found out that the vote wasn't counted for Abrams. How did that feel?
I mean, it was shocking, but I think it's one of those moments that you realize, or at least I realized, that oh, wow, like they really don't want you to vote. Like voter suppression is real. It's not mm-hmm. something that was, you know, the civil rights movement, especially in Atlanta or something like that, or everyone thinks things are so far removed. So it was in black and white TV time. And it's not. It's not. And I think that me as an, I will say an older millennial, even though I don't like the term millennial because I think you get a lot of bad press. I think it was shocking, but it wasn't like, oh my gosh, it was just like, oh, you really don't want me to vote. Like this is happening. This is still happening. And I think that just made me a little bit more, I don't know, disenchanted. And but I still vote and I still participate, but I definitely am disenchanted for sure.
Wow, disenchanted. That is a strong, strong statement. What would re-enchant you to government voting?
I mean, if the American government actually upheld its ideals, I think I'm firmly progressive and I believe that progressive ideals are more than attainable in the United States, especially traveling the world and seeing these progressive ideals being not only, you know, upheld but implemented in quote unquote emerging economies, economies that are much smaller than the United States, in countries in which they have gone through recent civil unrest or world wars and things like that the United States has not encountered on its soil in this century. Like that's what's disenchanting, because it's like everyone screams America's number one. It's like number one at what? Like the Summer Olympics? Like, okay, we win the most
COVID cases.
Yeah, we have the top number of COVID cases. We have the most what is it? Maternal mortality for a industrialized nation. We are the best at a lot of really bad things.
Yeah, sure. And I don't want it to come off as I'm unpatriotic, because I still deeply love my country. I think that's why I'm so upset, is because I love my country and I know the people, that the American people, you know, that are not upheld. These are the right Americans, like the American people that work harder than anyone else, it seems like, in the world for mm-hmm. pennies, and that have been programmed to believe that if you work hard, then you can deserve health care, then you can deserve these other basic human rights, and that if they experience poverty, it's because they're lazy. And that's literally not the truth, especially in a country like the United States of America. And it's just, it's very, very disappointing. And it's very hurtful. I know that I have a privilege to live outside the United States, and I know that my American privilege is actually flexed, and I actually get to experience it more outside the United States as a Black American woman. And I want better for my country. I want better for my fellow Americans. I don't want my fellow Americans to have to leave the United States to feel American, or to feel, you know, or to experience these, you know, human rights that are just here. I don't want that for them. I believe that America can be an amazing place that works for everyone, but it requires accountability. It requires a lot of hard work, and it requires us to really walk the talk. And I just don't feel like that has happened at all. And so, yeah, it's disappointing for me, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I'm hopeful too. I mean, I can't say that I feel differently. You know, I have always thought that America could be a great country if we just took more care of our people and our infrastructure and our ability to house people and our jobs. You know, I don't think that the American ideals are not ideals in other countries. They're just standard parts of life. You know, it is disappointing, but we have to persist. You know, I mean, I know there's people that have been working on justice issues their whole life, and I can't say that personally. You know, it's only been in the last, I would say in the last 4 years that I've been more active politically. I've always been a person who donated money to various causes because I want to support people who are doing the work that I believe that are necessary. But that I've personally been active, it hasn't been for that long. And I don't know if I feel like I'm glad that I started doing something, and I wish I had maybe done something earlier, but honestly, yeah, I think maybe I was a little bit demotivated by all the circumstances. And actually, what really got me more interested in anything was George W. Bush. Like, the Bush administration was a horror for me, living overseas. And I, at that time, I worked for the military. And it just was a nightmare scenario. And it made me realize that we have to do better, that we can't be these terrible gangster people that are just destroying people's lives and destroying their countries and not really caring about the soldiers after they're wounded and not really caring about the people in our country. Yeah, that we have to do better. And so hopefully there's more people like me and you and Adrian that want to do something to make things better. I mean, I know there's a whole bunch of people that I see them every day on Facebook that are just like, woo, America, you know, and we're so great.
You know what, Angela? Yeah. You know what, Angela and Christine, what's maybe sad or ironic is that we're echoing the same, we're having the same conversation that it's been happening since, I don't know what, maybe Reconstruction. But I know, you know, look at, you know, after our soldiers, African-American soldiers fought in World War One. You know, they saw life in Europe, you know, came back and still faced atrocities, you know, after World War II. And then, you know, we had the intellectuals, you know, that went over and fled to Paris, you know, James Baldwin, you know, Richard Wright and all of this, and, you know, saw how things could be differently. But then, you know, I remember when I first moved to the UK in 96, and people were like, oh, we solely respect African Americans. At least you guys had your civil rights movement. You know, we haven't done that over here. And we have police brutality, and we're not paid equally. And then you see all this with the Black Lives Movement. Why is it global? Because that stuff is happening everywhere. Black people are, at least in European countries, it seems. You know, so as much, and that's the beauty of America. We can call people out and say things. And we have had these movements. We have realized our power. I know Coretta Scott King, I think, was quoted as saying, every generation has to have its civil rights movement. So it's our time, you know, our parents had their civil rights movement. They're our grandparents, you know, this is our time to be doing what we're doing, whether we call ourselves activists or, but I don't, you know, none of our ancestors have not been disillusioned for whatever reason, whether it's because, okay, my vote didn't count or because, you know what, I couldn't even vote. You know, I walked, what, how many miles to the polls and they told me to count marbles or some stupid, you know, stuff that they used to do to suppress the vote. So it's sad that it's happening in 2020, but it's not surprising that it's happening in 2020. You know, that's the way I look at it. You know, I'm not necessarily cynical, not necessarily naive, but we know who, you know, founded this country and under what real ideals, regardless of our beautiful constitution and how eloquent the preamble is written and how idealistic it is. And of course, that's gonna be something we're striving for until it's hit. Now that target's a moving target. You know, I don't say, you know, it's a moving target. And as you say, it's attainable. Will it be attainable in our lifetimes? Definitely not if we don't do our part. So I'm glad that we agree that it needs to be hit and we can do it. You know, there's no generation that came before us that didn't want their grandchildren to have it. So we're no different.
Well, I think that it is attainable and that maybe in the past, it wasn't obtainable. And only because of, I mean, circumstances of economy and information that it was, people couldn't share information as readily as they do now. And you can't, you could always educate a small group of people, but you know, now we can really spread out and help people understand. Yeah, I understand what you mean, Christine. Half the time, I see all these crazy people on the internet and I think, I don't want to say we're doomed, but, you know, like, I just think, you know, that something's got to happen so that we can just forge forward with progress and not be held back. And I hope that that's something that's going to happen with this election, that we win, you know, we get a trifecta. I have to, of course, make my obligatory, please, everyone, if you haven't requested an absentee ballot, and I know that there's people who haven't done it yet. I just sent out our newsletter yesterday, and you can see what links people click, and a whole lot of people still click vote from abroad, no matter how much you tell them. So please do it now, do it today. There's not that much time left. There are 12 days to the election. And if you have to send your ballot back by postal mail, you need to send it by a courier service like FedEx, DHL, UPS, whatever, because it won't make it in time with the regular mail. It just won't at this point. And don't use the diplomatic pouch, because that is, I'm not really sure where people got the idea that using the diplomatic pouch was a good idea. If you live in a country where there's not any mail service, it might be a good idea. But if you live in Europe, or I don't know, Canada or something like that, even Mexico, what happens with the diplomatic pouch is that they wait till it's full, and then somebody takes it on a plane, and then they get to New York or wherever, and then they just dump it into the mail. The actual
if you're American, outside of the US, I recommend you register with your local embassy, because they send you mail, they keep you in the loop, they let you know what's going on, when it's not safe for Americans to go certain places. And they also have been sending messages and telling you, don't use the diplomatic pouch now, it's too late, it won't get there. I'm still on the mailing list from London, and I get it from Stockholm. So they warn people about that. But as Angela said, it's not too late to request your ballot. In lots of cases, it may be too late to register to vote. But if you go to votefromabroad.org and request your ballot, ask them to send it back to you by email and check your spam folder. If you know you live in a state where you have to return your ballot by post and you have not received your ballot, go ahead and use the federal emergency write-in absentee ballot, FWAB, and get that back as courier service as fast as you can. If you need that information in Spanish, it's votefromabroad.org/ES. And I will vote in the US, iwillvote.com. Go there, it will help you make a voting plan to let you know if you can mail your ballot in, where you can drop it off, where early voting started. We've talked with some people who said, and actually, Christine, I don't know if you've heard this in your state of Georgia, where single Black women don't feel safe literally going to the polls physically. So make a plan and have a voting buddy. Don't go by yourself. Stay safe in every sense, whether it's gonna be intimidation, whether you need to mask up and glove up because it's gonna be, you're going to be in line. Angela's telling people take picnic baskets, you know, take tons of water, because you may have to stand and wait a long time. We heard from a guy in Texas. Well, we read about a guy in Texas whose father was turned away from the polls. They said that he wasn't registered. He told his son, make sure you have a voting buddy. He told his son, looked him up on iwillvote.com, saw he was registered, took him back down there, and he got voted. So don't get turned away from the polls. You can ask for a provisional ballot if they tell you you're not registered and you know better. And then follow up and do what you have to do for that provisional ballot. But we know voter suppression is real. Voter intimidation is real. Do not go to the polls and get turned away. And have a voting plan. How important is a plan, Angela?
It is incredibly important. Even if you live overseas, a voting plan is important. I vote in Florida, and it's one of those states where you can send a fax back to your ballot by fax. So I haven't sent a fax in, I don't know, 15 years, something like that. But the last printer that I bought is an HP OfficeJet, and it has a scanner, a printer, and a fax machine in it. So I thought, okay, sure, this device has a fax machine. I will fax my ballot back. That should be simple. And it was, except for one little part. I have part of our house has renovations, construction in it. So I had to move my printer from one room to another. It was in my office. My office is the room that is being under construction. So I moved the printer, but I had a cable for the fax And but I never really plugged it in or anything. I just had it there just in case. So I'm going through the room and I'm like, oh, there's that cable. So I'm pulling the cable. And then I discover that one of the couplers is missing off the cable. So I kind of freaked out. I was like, oh my God, this was for the state primary in August. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta go out and hopefully I can go to the store and still buy, you know, a normal phone cable. And I went to the store, got my cable, hooked it up, and everything worked. But if I had waited, if I had decided to send this fax at, let's say, 9 o'clock or something like that, because that's 3 o'clock in Florida, so it still would have been on time, I would have been in a lot of trouble because all the stores were closed. So,
Angela, I use a free online fax service. You're smart. You would have figured out you could have done
that's,
it online.
That's true. You can use, there's a couple of free fax services, which I would love to tell you their names that I have.
I use eFax, but just Google free online fax. Well, there's tons of them.
Check out our latest newsletter, which I'll put a link to in the show notes. It's there. But yeah, you can use an online fax service. But like I said, I thought, okay, I'm good. I've got this printer with a fax in it, blah, blah, blah. Everything's going to be fine. And I mean, it turned out fine in the end, but I did have issues. So when I got to the actual general election, everything was fine then.
But I think that's part of your point to have a plan. So your plan would have been to make sure your fax machine works. Yes. If that's going to be your way of returning your ballot.
That's right.
So yeah, as Angela says, don't wait to the last minute to find out how you can return your ballot and what your plan is going to be. Don't wake up if you're in the States on November 3rd and be like, I haven't voted. What do I do? Oh my God, don't let that happen. But there are drop boxes around the place. Check and make sure it's legit. I saw something in the mail that Republicans in some state refused.
Yeah, it was California. They put out fake drop boxes. I just, which I'm 100% sure is a crime. Tampering with the election, tampering with ballots, that has to be a crime. And these people should be elected. But let's go back to Christine. I don't want you to think we're just ignoring you, because that's not what we want. But we have to get our voting plug in. It's like I said, there's still so many people that haven't done this, and they want to. So Christine, tell us about your podcast. What is your podcast about?
Yeah, my podcast is called Flourish in the Foreign. It is a weekly personal narrative podcast that elevates and affirms the voices and stories of Black women living and thriving abroad. So the podcast centers Black women and their experiences, but also explores living abroad as a pathway to wellness. Mm-hmm. And I just launched it in May, not knowing what I was doing with podcasting at all. It's not really in my wheelhouse. And it has just been a crazy success. It has been, I guess, something that people have been wanting to hear. It just surpassed over 6,600 downloads this month. And it just keeps on picking up speed. And it's been really wonderful. The impetus for creating it was really, I knew I wanted to live abroad since I was 17, basically. I've been traveling as an unaccompanied minor since I was about 3 or 4. This is like the early 90s. So whenever I tell people that, they're like, what? I'm like, the 90s are a different life. It was a different time. And then my dad, who was actually in the military, was stationed here in Europe, in Germany, and I would come over for the summer to see him. And so I've always traveled a lot, and seeing different cultures just became kind of normal for me. And so by the time I was 17, I knew I wanted to live abroad. I studied abroad when I was in university, but when I graduated from university, I didn't really know how to make it happen. And this podcast is kind of like something I wish I would have had when I was 21 and 25, when I was 30. Something that was kind of like an anecdotal resource bank of Black women who are living their lives on their own terms all over the world, doing so many different things and learning about their reasons why and why a certain place works for them or doesn't work for them, stuff like that. And it's just been an amazing, amazing journey so far. I've got to meet so many fantastic just incredible Black women who are just doing the damn thing all over the world. And it's been amazing, the reception, because I think a lot of women have gotten, you know, DMs from women who are in college to women who are in their 50s or 60s, who are just inspired and who know that they can do it as well. So that is Flourishing with Foreign. It comes out every Monday, and it's just been super, super just affirming to do. So, yeah.
My friend Lisa Mitchell, Lisa R. Mitchell was on it, was a guest on your show not too long ago. And she was like, Adrian, you should be on here. And I met her in Stockholm through a French friend who said, Lisa's going to be in Sweden on her way to Paris to celebrate a landmark birthday, and you just have to meet her. So I met her and her sister and have been in love with her ever since. She's a financial genius, but you know that. And I want to invite you. I don't know if you're in my Black Women in Europe group, but it's a blog that I started in 2006, you know, when I moved to Brussels in 2002. But when I moved to Sweden in 2006, I was like, God, where am I? And I needed to make sure that I was connecting with other Black women. And, you know, I'm from D.C. at a time when they called it a chocolate city. And, you know, we were doing everything. You know, Black women, Black people were just, you know, we were doing everything. So I was like, I know that's happening in Europe. And that has helped me find a lot of contemporaries, but also find out about, you know, the Black judges at the in The Hague, you know, in the Court of Human Rights, and, you know, that are in military, members of parliament in different countries, you know, that are leading nonprofits, that are in corporations, and, you know, from the beauty queens to the athletes, you know, the Olympians, to the singers. So we've got a group. You should join the group as well, because people need to know about your podcast. You might find some interesting people there. You should have Angela, possibly. She's been in Germany for 20 years. Maybe you guys, you have that German connection because your dad was there. Maybe you visited places where Angela's been.
Oh, I'm sure.
Probably. I would actually love to have both of you ladies on the podcast. I'm not recording right now because it was snowballed. I have so many stories actually in the can to go into well into 2021. But when I start recording in probably February, I would definitely
that sounds
reach
perfect.
Out because I
if we're not suicidal, then
oh, I hope not.
We're not gonna be. We're gonna be happy. Yes, come on.
Yeah. But I think it's so important for. I think especially Black American. I do have women from across the diaspora on the show. And I think that's really interesting to get their perspectives. But I would say specifically for Black American women to see us doing it, seeing us really cultivate a life outside the United States. I think that has been like the most interesting feedback I've gotten, because people think like, oh, okay, maybe we'll do it for a year or two. And then they're like, oh, wait, you're not going back? And it's like, yeah, I have guests who are like, no, you know, and the reasons why, and pertaining to living abroad as a pathway to wellness. It's always something I'm really fascinated by, because wellness is not just bubble baths and crystals. I think particularly for Black American women, like, it's nice, but that's not what I really mean by wellness, you know, professional wellness, financial wellness, emotional, mental, physical wellness. And how has living outside of your home country, how has living outside of the United States created a way for you to maybe be fully, you know, well? And what does that mean to you? And how does that practice look like for you? It's been really interesting. And I think it has definitely planted a lot of seeds in a lot of women who hadn't really considered living abroad.
Wow. I would love to talk about this with you on your podcast, because... Yeah. I started out as a person who was just coming here for a short period of time. And then one day I realized, oh, you're just not ever going back, are you? Like, it's like you, after at literally at 10 years, I was like, you're not going back, are you? Like, you'd only plan to be here for a maximum of 5, and now it's 10. So, yeah. So I would love to talk, and how being in Europe kind of changed my life. Yeah
I think sure. It's so important. It's so important. And you know, we're not really represented, you know, in like a lot of the expat forums and magazines and things like that. I mean, I've been to an event, I always tell people here in Barcelona, it was an entrepreneurship, like startup weekend kind of thing. And an Australian guy, a white Australian guy, was like, you know, I introduced myself, I was chatting with people, and he was just like, but what are you doing here? And I was like, what do you mean what I'm doing here? What are you doing here? Like, you're outside the EU too, it's not easy for you to come into this country and live here. And I think that is what's very interesting. The lack of representation makes people feel like, what do Black women do? Like, why would we ever leave our home country? You know, besides out of like struggle or war or strife. And it's like, no, we leave our home country for career, for love on a whim, you know, for adventure, just like anyone else. And I think the representation is so key. So yeah, I would love for you guys to record with me in 2021 to get so many different perspectives. And I love to chat with women who have lived long term, you know, more than 5 years, 10 years abroad, because I think the introspection and reflection is just really, really fascinating.
Yeah. You know, Christine, one thing that's interesting that you said, and I hear that thread throughout the diaspora, that the European women who cannot wait to get out of their Europe, the Black women that are 2-3 generations in France or the UK that cannot wait to get out of there. That want to live in the States or other European countries or whatever. So we've got that common thread, you know, it's just a different flavor. The US has got its unique flavor, but you talk to some sisters that have been born and raised in France and they're like, oh my God, it's so racist. I can't wait to get out of here. The US has more opportunities. And that's one thing about being a foreigner in the US, you're gonna be treated than the descendant of a slave in the US, depending on where you're coming from. And I know a sister in the UK, she was like, all I have to do is open my mouth in the States and people love me, you know, cause that British accent. And she said the same thing to me, like when you come to the UK, you know, she's like, you know, you just say you're American, they think you have money, you know, you get respect, da, 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 da. And it's like, really, wow. You know, she's like, yeah, because they follow me around the store. And I was like, they used to follow me around the store. You know, so you have these shared experiences of what happened. It's just a different accent, different flavor. So that's very interesting. You said something about you have always voted. When was your first election outside of the U.S.? And how did you know you could vote?
Outside of the U.S., what was my first election? Well, I moved abroad 3 years ago. So I think my very first election was probably the primary for the gubernatorial race for Stacey Abrams in Georgia. But I knew that I could vote because I had also, I lived outside of Georgia. I went to law school in Miami. And I still was voting in Georgia. And so I knew everything about absentee ballots and things like that. So that wasn't really foreign for me at all, actually.
But a lot of Americans don't know that they can vote outside of the US. Did you research that or you just assumed, or did you know that from your military experience?
I just assumed. I don't remember researching it or being like stressed out about it. I just knew that I was still gonna vote.
Good.
And I'm not sure why. I guess I just have always voted. My parents aren't like super politically active, but they are very adamant on voting. So it's like, it was just a no brainer for me. But maybe both my parents had been in the military as well. So maybe they had planted seeds about how I would do it, but I definitely wasn't ever confused about how to do it.
Now that's good to know, because I do think for some people voting is a reflex. It's just like this muscle that you know that you flex, and that, you know, so that means that you're aware of it. We found a lot of Americans outside of the U.S. don't know that they can vote, which is why our work is so important, because your responsibilities as a citizen, U.S. citizen, don't end when you leave the soil. You're still required to file taxes, may not have to pay. If your sons are born abroad, they still have to register for selective service, and you can vote. So, Angela, what can people do if they still need help? They can get live help.
That's right. We have live help for voting every Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Sunday it's 24 hours. On the other days it's 4 hours, and I think it's. Today's help on Friday is from 12 p.m. Eastern time to 4 p.m. Eastern time, or 6 p.m. Central European time to 10 p.m. Central European time. Tomorrow's help on Saturday is Central European time. It's from 8 to 4, so it's almost all day if you live in Europe, and it's like 4 hours if you're in the United States, and if you're in other time zones like in Asia, you have basically the whole day to get help. You can,
because Democrats also, was in four, well, I said, oh, we're in four regions. How can we do the 24-hour thing? Because we're in four regions. We're in the Americas. Well, we're in
the 24 hours is based on the Eastern time zone. So that covers most people it covers everyone, really, that there's a time that you can go there. You know, I mean, unless you are, I don't know. I mean, I'm not that good at time zones, so I'm not even going to try to speculate, but you can find a time in 24 hours.
Yeah, we're in 140. We've got members in 149 or so countries, organized country committees in 40, over 45. I always get the number confused, but we're in three regions, Asia Pacific, Europe, Middle East, and Africa. And we're in the Americas, and we're one of the largest volunteer America. I think we may be the largest volunteer organization of America's outside Americans outside of the United States. But, you know, say you're already voted and you're like, okay, I want to help bring this vote in. We have phone banking. If you can join democratsabroad.org, join in your country committee, get sign up for training for phone banking. And we're going to start calling people in the States for the Biden-Harris campaign. Yes. We've got campaigns online on Call Hub. All you need is a computer. Chrome browser is the best. And so it's no money coming out of your pocket. You're using your internet connection. And you can call voters to make sure they've registered. Register to vote, request the ballot.
Request or have any questions. I'm so excited that we're starting to call people in the States now, that we finished our members, which is kind of amazing. But this year we have literally like 500 phone bankers this year, so, and they're all over the world.
There's somebody that's called over 2,000 people or something. I mean, you know, phone banking was like my first organized activity I did with Democrats Abroad in Stockholm. So, you know, don't feel, this is not an election where you need to feel like helpless or powerless or you can't do anything because you're outside of the U.S. That's not true. In addition to voting, you can phone bank. You can call your fellow Americans in the U.S. and say, look, I'm calling from Thailand. This is so important to me. I'm calling you. Have you voted? What is your plan? So go to democratsabroad.org. You can join from anywhere in the world, and you can become one of our phone bankers. That's going to start really soon. We don't need to feel powerless. We don't need to feel apathetic. I can understand feeling disenfranchised. You know, you got to get in there. Nobody ever gives us anything. We have to fight for everything that we get. You don't want to wake up on the 4th and say, I didn't do everything I could have done, no matter what the outcome. If we fight the good fight, what more can we do? We know voter suppression is real. If you get turned away at the polls in the States, don't use a provisional ballot or let someone know. Angela, if you have trouble voting outside of the U.S., what do we have? Some emails.
Yes, that's right. You can contact voterprotection@democratsabroad.org. They will help you. Just send them an email, and they will help you overcome any obstacles you have at your local election office. They're super good. I mean, they actually got several states this year to allow email. People to email their ballots, like our work with these local election offices to allow it to change in various states. So that, I think it was, I want to say it was Illinois and another one that they allowed it to send by email, that they worked with them to get it. So you could send your ballot back by email. So they're really effective. And if you need them, they're at voterprotection@democratsabroad.org. There's also one other thing that you can do. And to help, if you don't want to feel powerless, like, you can ask your friends to vote to make sure that they're registered. You can send all your friends on Facebook or Instagram a message. You can, you know, tweet out, I will vote, or votefromabroad.org. Make a post on social media to let people know that they can still register to vote. And get an absentee ballot. You don't have to just do something structured like phone banking. You can take it upon yourself to contact people you know, or that you know well, or that you don't know well, like, and ask them. There's a few people I know, and I do it every now and then, where I'll hear American English on the street, and I'll just be like, hi, which is so stupid. I feel so stupid doing it, but I do it anyway. Hi, are you American? You know, and then I'm like, here's a card from Vote For, you know, you can vote. Like, here's a card and vote. When my husband, last year, around this time, a little bit earlier, we were in our annual meeting for our region, and we were in Athens, and my husband got a cold. And he was, but he had a cold with a really high fever, and I was really concerned. So I was like, I went to the hotel desk and was like, oh my God, you have to call a doctor, you know? And the doctor came and he started talking, and he was Greek. And he was like, yeah, you know, I'm American too. I was born in New York, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, you are? Well, that's really great. Did you know you could vote? And I handed him a vote from abroad. I'm sure he thought it was totally inappropriate, but when am I ever going to see this guy again? So, I mean, my husband is fine. So it's not like I was like over his dead body, like, do you want to vote? But no, he's fine. Everything is fine now. But yeah, you just have to, sometimes not everybody can do that. Like, you know, but I'm determined to get rid of Donald Trump and all the people that support him that are in Congress right now. So if that means that I have to walk up to strangers or like I had done in the past few months, be on Facebook Live every freaking day talking about stuff, or Instagram Live talking about stuff, then that's what I'm going to do, because we need progress. We need change. We need to do some things to tackle the racism and sexism in our country, because quite honestly, we've never actually done anything to stop racism or sexism. We've created some laws that make you have penalties, but we've never actually had a program that actually educated people or tried to stop this from happening to children becoming racist. This has never happened. I don't care what
people
say.
Well, you know, I'm going to encourage people to be like Christine in Spain, who's a Georgia voter and who voted for Stacey Abrams, and to her shock and horror, was able to find out that her vote didn't count. But that didn't keep her from coming back and voting, because Christine knows that voting matters, right? Christine, I'm going to give you the final word as our guest.
Yeah, I think voting is so critical. Even if you are abroad, we are still citizens. Unless you give it up, you're still a citizen, and there's still some responsibilities that you have to the country and to your fellow citizens of America. And I think the privilege that we have to live abroad, that we can see the ways in which United States are different and similar to different places. Also, we can see what works in our new home country and what could work in the United States. We have a different perspective, and we're kind of outside of the propaganda bubble of American media. And so I think it really behooves us to try to be active participants and allow our voices to be heard, because our voices are actually really, really critical. We understand, I think, even more keenly how foreign policy really affects the rest of the world, or how even our domestic policy affects the rest of the world by being outside the United States. We understand that as American citizens, we really are individual ambassadors to our country, and that means a lot. And I think we can't really take that for granted. But if you have not voted, please vote today. There really is no excuse not to vote. If you're not going to vote, then I think you have to really reconsider your citizenship, because, you know, citizenship isn't like a free thing. Like it's not. It requires us to be active. It requires us to be engaged, period. That's how I feel. So please, please vote today.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Christine, for joining us. And I look forward to speaking with you in February. That will be just enough time for me to like rest and replenish myself from this long 4-year slog, hopefully. And Adrian, as always, you have a great day, Adrian, at your event. It sounds super. I wish I could be there with you. And everybody, vote. Time is running out. 12 days, not 16. VoteFromAbroad.org, IWillVote.com. And if you need help or information, it'll all be in the show notes. Thank you all, both you women, so much for joining me today. And
Christine, you were amazing, inspiring. Oh, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's been great to chat with you guys.
Stay safe and healthy in Barcelona.
Thank you. I'm going to try.
Yeah, everybody have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Counting it down. Ciao.